Today is Saturday, August 22nd, and this is the World Socialist website. Articles have been read by an automated narration. The U.S. bond market crisis and the coming eruption of class struggle. The U.S. Treasury Department intervened this week to contain a sell-off in long-term government debt, a sign of a mounting financial crisis that is driving an immense escalation of the class struggle. After the yield on the 30-year Treasury bond rose to 5.3%, its highest level since 2007, the department announced that it would at least double its purchases of long-dated bonds to a minimum of $4 billion per operation, beginning September 9th and running through early November. The move produced only a brief fall in yields before they resumed their rise. The failure points to the approaching limits of a financial order that has rested for decades on the unending expansion of U.S. government debt. Federal debt crossed $40 trillion this week, up from $5.7 trillion in 2000, and up from $38 trillion as recently as last October. Interest payments reached $963 billion during the first 10 months of the fiscal year, about $200 billion more than military spending and slightly more than Medicare. As yields rise, the government must pay more to refinance maturing debt. That increases the interest bill, requires still more borrowing, and places still greater pressure on the bond market. Successive Democratic and Republican administrations accumulated the debt through tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy decades of unending war and repeated rescues of the banks and financial markets. After the crashes of 2008 and 2020, the government and Federal Reserve supplied trillions of dollars to protect the fortunes of the oligarchy and fuel another surge in stock prices, corporate debt, and speculation. The privileged global position of the dollar allowed the United States to carry this process far beyond the capacity of any other capitalist power. Central banks and financial institutions throughout the world accumulated dollars and treasury securities as reserves, collateral, and a store of value. This demand allowed Washington to finance deficits and military operations on an immense scale. But the growth of the debt now corrodes the privilege that made it possible. The dollar has weakened, while gold has reached new heights, expressing growing doubts about the currency as a store of value. The dollar index fell to a three-month low this week, and gold, which set a record above $5,500 an ounce in January, rose 4.7% on the week. Expressions of debasement fears are a weaker USD and long gold, Citigroup analysts wrote in a note reported Friday by Axios under the headline, Dollar Debasement Talk Returns. We do not doubt the ability of the U.S. Treasury to keep yields contained for quite some time, the analysts added. The main price to pay for lowering rates in such a way is a weaker currency. The historic decline of American capitalism is approaching a new stage. As David North explained in his opening report to the Ninth National Congress of the Socialist Equality Party, the traditional remedies, fiscal expansion, and monetary easing, are constrained by the mountain of debt and by the fragility of the dollar itself. Because the dollar and treasury market occupy the center of world finance, the crisis assumes an inherently global character. Wall Street has already announced who must pay. The Wall Street Journal identified Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and other mandatory programs as the principal targets for further cuts. Referring to the attacks enacted last year, it declared in an editorial, Republicans in last year's tax bill made modest reforms to Medicaid, food stamps, and student loans. Alas, these changes don't go far enough, and the GOP has shrunk from making bigger reforms. Those supposedly modest measures will take more than $1 trillion from Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program and $187 billion from food assistance over the next decade. Food stamp enrollment fell by more than 4.5 million people, 11%, the steepest decline since 1997, between the signing of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act on July 4, 2025 in April, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. After enhanced health insurance subsidies expired on January 1st, marketplace enrollment fell by more than a million, and the average monthly premium paid by enrollees rose from $113 to $178. If these are modest, then it means that Wall Street regards them as only a down payment on wholesale attacks on Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Axios quoted a note by Société Générale that summarized the choices confronting the U.S. government in a note titled, "Scott Bessent is the strong dollar's nemesis." Budget deficits remain high. This will be a growing issue, which will either force the U.S. to tighten fiscal policy, accept higher borrowing costs, or let the dollar weaken. Translated from the language of the banks, austerity, rising interest rates, or inflation. Three different routes for imposing the costs of the crisis on the working class. The wealth of America's 977 billionaires rose by $2.2 trillion in the year to June, reaching $9.24 trillion, according to an analysis by Americans for Tax Fairness. But it goes without saying that any solution to the debt crisis, which threatens the wealth of the oligarchy, will not be considered. The demands for austerity are determined not merely by subjective greed, but by the deep crisis of American and world capitalism. The financial oligarchy can defend the immense mass of fictitious wealth only by continuously driving down the living standards of the working class at home and seizing foreign markets, resources, and supply chains abroad. Washington launched its war against Iran to seize control of the country's oil wealth and eliminate a central barrier to U.S. domination of the Middle East. Nearly 6 months later, American imperialism has achieved neither objective. The war has developed into a military and political debacle that has only deepened the political crisis of the U.S. and accelerated the economic breakdown it sought to overcome. The Democratic Party participated in every stage of the process that produced the present crisis: financial deregulation, the bailout of Wall Street, military expansion, and attacks on the working class. It defends the same capitalist property relations and global interests as the Republicans. The developing crisis demolishes the claim of the Democratic Socialists of America that workers can achieve social progress without a struggle against the capitalist oligarchy and the property relations on which its power rests. As Trotsky explained in Wither France, governmental intervention on the foundations of a capitalist regime can be of assistance only in shifting the unprofitable expenditures of the decline from one class to another. So long as the financial magnates control all the basic levers of industry, credit, and commerce, they will use that power to impose the costs of the crisis on workers. The trade union apparatus, as it has for decades, is taking an active part in this offensive. The bureaucracies base their privileges on their relations with corporate management and the state. They are suppressing strikes, helping impose plant closures and layoffs, cuts to wages and benefits, and are invoking corporate competitiveness to justify every concession. As the ruling class expands the war economy, union officials such as United Auto Workers President Sean Fain are already invoking national interests to discipline workers and subordinate them to American imperialism. Every immediate struggle now develops within this broader context. A fight against a plant closure, mass layoffs, artificial intelligence-driven job destruction, healthcare cuts, or pension reductions will collide with a ruling class declaring that there is no money for social needs, while it directs almost $1 trillion a year to creditors and limitless resources to financial rescue and war. The social force capable of defeating this program already exists in the international working class, which numbers some 3.5 billion people, and operates the most integrated productive apparatus ever created. As David North explained, this force is not being assembled by history for a protest. It is being assembled for the world socialist revolution. Everything depends on the struggle to mobilize the working class as an independent social and political force. This is why the Socialist Equality Party urges workers to build rank and file committees in every workplace, independent of the union apparatus. These committees must transfer power from the bureaucracy into workers' hands and link struggles across industries and national borders through the International Workers' Alliance of Rank and File Committees, IWARFC. The alternative confronting humanity is socialism or barbarism. The fight to defend jobs, living standards, and social rights leads directly to the question of which class controls society and whose interests govern economic life. The working class must take control of the banks and major corporations, expropriate the oligarchy, and reorganize production to meet human need rather than private profit. That is the program of socialism. Global outpouring of support for imprisoned Ukrainian socialist Bogdan Sirotyuk. More than 1,000 people in 58 countries and territories have signed the petition for Bogdan Sirotyuk's release since August 10th, when a Ukrainian court imposed a 15-year prison term on the 27-year-old for seeking to unite the workers of Russia and Ukraine against the war. The growing number of signatures is accompanied by tens of thousands of people viewing, liking, and sharing content published by social media accounts reporting on and opposing the case. The widespread public support contrasts sharply with major media outlets in the United States and Europe, which have maintained a deliberate blackout of coverage of his case as a wartime propaganda measure. Bogdan was convicted of a thought crime. He urged Russian and Ukrainian workers to make common cause against the war, oppose Putin's invasion and Washington's proxy war in the same articles, and denounce the official glorification of Nazi collaborators. The state declared these positions high treason and entered his World Socialist website, WSWS, articles as evidence. The sentence stripped him of his property and condemned the books and pamphlets of his organization, the Young Guard of Bolshevik Leninists, YGBL, to destruction. The petition, launched after Bogdan's arrest on April 25, 2024, now carries more than 6,300 names. Federico Picerni, who teaches Chinese literature at the University of Bologna, signed on Thursday, "Solidarity Forever, Freedom for Revolutionary Internationalists." He was one of 42 Italians who signed on Wednesday and Thursday, a two-day total behind only Britain and the United States. Picerni joins the academics who signed the petition or wrote to the court in the days after the verdict. The historians Victoria Bynum, Mark Tauger, and Grzegorz Rosolinski-Libe, the biographer of Stepan Bandera, the anthropologist Miha Kozorog, and the sociologist Volodymyr Ischenko. The response online has grown throughout the week. Mint Press News, the U.S. alternative outlet, told its Instagram readers Thursday that more than 6,000 people from around 60 countries have signed an open letter demanding Sirotyuk's freedom. It has 5,500 likes. On Wednesday, the Fight for a Future account reproduced the WSWS's statement on the sentencing at length. The post has drawn more than 32,000 likes, 1,100 comments, and 3,600 shares. There is nothing the bourgeois state hates more than an individual who dares to preach peace and not war, the account wrote, who dares to speak in favor of class solidarity instead of nationalist hate. The same day, a Ukrainian Telegram channel called Budni Ukalyanta, a draft Dodger's Daily Life, posted a screenshot of the WSWS's Russian language statement to its 30,500 subscribers. Its post read, "Not a concentration camp. 15 years for criticizing the regime." Opposition to conscription in Ukraine is massive. In January, Ukraine's then defense minister Mykhailo Fedorov said that 200,000 soldiers had left their units and that 2 million Ukrainians were wanted for evading the draft, the Kyiv Post reported. Bogdan himself had written an article about the recruitment squads seizing men on the street. Marta Havrishko, a Ukrainian Holocaust historian at Clark University, wrote about the verdict on X on Monday in a post seen more than 50,000 times. Among the acts of treason the judgment lists are his objections to the state's honoring of the Waffen-SS Galicia Division and to Nazi insignia in Ukrainian military units. "So here is the wonderfully contorted logic," she wrote. "It is apparently not the glorification of Nazi collaborators or the tolerance of symbols such as the Wolfsangel, SS bolts, and the Black Sun that provides ammunition for Russian propaganda. No. Openly criticizing any of this is what becomes treason." She added, "So if I ever cross the Ukrainian border, feel free to look for me in an SBU basement. I too suffer from the unfortunate tendency to criticize the apologetics of Nazism in Ukraine." an occupational hazard among Jewish Holocaust researchers, apparently. Even Kachanovsky, a political scientist at the University of Ottawa, reposted her post to his 47,000 followers, calling the sentence Orwellian. The Italian outlet Inside Over's Instagram post on the verdict, published Tuesday, drew more than 5,500 likes, and on Friday, Azer News, an English-language newspaper in Baku, reported it under the headline, Ukrainian activist sentenced to 15 years for high treason over articles critical of both Russia and Zelensky. Inside Ukraine, the press has handled the case on the state's terms. At least 7 Ukrainian outlets ran a press release from the Security Service of Ukraine, SBU, on August 14. Every version that can be read in full withholds Bogdan's name, describing him as the pro-Kremlin agitator or the organizer of a neo-Bolshevik underground. Organized political tendencies have also begun to act. This week, socialist groups in Ukraine, Russia, France, Britain, and Canada took up Bogdan's case, among them longtime political opponents of the WSWS. Members of the Revolutionary Communist International, the organization founded in June 2024 when the International Marxist Tendency relaunched under that name, signed in Ireland, Italy, and Canada on Wednesday and in Spain on Thursday. On Wednesday, the organization's Ukrainian supporters published a call for solidarity on its website, Marxist.com. The Partisan Defense Committee in Canada signed on Wednesday, 2 days after its British counterpart. Both are legal defense organizations affiliated with the International Communist League, the Spartacist tendency. Lutte Ouvrière, the French organization, published an article on the case Wednesday headlined, Ukraine, 15 years in prison for Trotskyism. The Socialist Workers' Party, a small Russian group, published a statement on its Telegram channel Thursday. Despite our attitude toward both the YGBL and the WSWS itself, we remain in solidarity with Bogdan Sirotiuk as a political prisoner. Marxist political views are not a crime, and if some state thinks otherwise, that says a great deal about it. All of these organizations have backed the campaign despite significant political differences with the WSWS. The verdict cites a speech Bogdan gave to the ICFI's online May Day rally on April 30, 2023, as proof that he justified the Russian invasion. He said, "This imperialist war was unleashed not in the interests of the proletariat of Russia, the proletariat of Ukraine, and the proletariat of America, but in the interests of the capital of these countries." SBU officers arrested Bogdan on April 25, 2024, when he was 25, and branded him a Russian agent. More than 2 years later, it has produced no document, no witness, and no act of espionage. For treason under martial law, Ukraine's criminal code allowed the court only 2 sentences, 15 years or life, with confiscation of property mandatory in either case. Rape without aggravating circumstances carries a maximum of 5 years in Ukraine. Bogdan's lawyers have until September 9th to file an appeal. A complaint filed for him in spring 2025 is still awaiting a ruling at the European Court of Human Rights. The petition is at wsdubois.org/freebogdan. Send letters to the Pervomace City District Court, inbox at pm.mk.court.gov.ua, and the Mykolaiv Court of Appeal, inbox at mka.court.gov.ua. Copy to freebogdan@wsdubois.org. Calling on them to vacate the 15-year sentence and free Bogdan. Ukrainian Parliament approves new SBU-linked defense minister. In a repudiation of widespread protests that followed the dismissal of former Ukrainian Defense Minister Mykhailo Fedorov, the Ukrainian parliament unanimously approved Yevhen Khmara to replace the former Western-backed Fedorov as defense minister on Wednesday. The dismissal of Fedorov, who is widely associated with a dramatic escalation of Ukrainian NATO drone attacks on Russia, had provoked protests from aggressively pro-war layers, drawing tens of thousands of people. At the protests in Kiev in support of Fedorov, one of many reactionary placards read, "Fedorov equals sign more Russian deaths, Sirsky, the former army chief, equal sign more Ukrainian deaths. Fedorov's removal had also been criticized by leading Ukrainian politicians and EU officials, who, according to The Guardian, had been startled by the move. Shortly after dismissing Fedorov, Zelensky appointed Kamara, then head of the Ukrainian Secret Service, SBU, as acting defense minister. Only in January 2026, Kamara had been appointed acting director of the SBU, the agency principally in charge of overseeing a domestic campaign of terror against opponents of the war and the Zelensky regime. Infamous for its infestation with neo-Nazis, the SBU initiated and oversaw the persecution of Ukrainian socialist Bogdan Sirotuk, who was recently sentenced to 15 years in prison for his internationalist opposition to the war and exposure of Ukrainian fascism. Kamara's appointment as head of the SBU was endorsed by white supremacist Andriy Beletsky, founder and former commander of the neo-Nazi Azov Battalion and current commander of Ukraine's fascist Third Assault Brigade. Just prior to the parliamentary vote on his appointment as defense minister, Kamara participated in the reinterment ceremony of Yevhen Konovalets, founder of the fascist organization of Ukrainian nationalists, OUN. Zelensky and Kamara were photographed happily shaking hands at the fascist celebration, demonstrating Kamara's and the entire Ukrainian state's full commitment to both the escalation of the war and the promotion of fascist forces. Kamara's appointment is aimed at further consolidating the role of the SBU in Ukraine amidst ever wider opposition to the war and the brutal campaign to forcibly mobilize men for the slaughter. In recent weeks, public discontent over the war has significantly escalated. On an almost daily basis, videos showing people being kidnapped off the streets, people attacking recruitment officers and others pleading with them to spare their spouses are going viral in Ukraine and internationally. Loading tweet, the seizure of physically and mentally ill people who are legally exempt from mobilization has provoked particular outrage. In one case, a 46-year-old man with severe mental and health problems, who weighed some 400 pounds, 200 kilograms, was declared fit for service. According to his mother, who was also his caretaker, he did not even realize that a war was going on. He died shortly thereafter at the recruitment center. There have also been numerous cases of people dying under unclarified circumstances at the Territorial Recruitment Centers, TRC, after having been kidnapped. In one case, Mykola Mishchenko, 34, died 2 days after having been forcibly mobilized. His mother said that his body was covered in bruises and one arm had been broken. In this, as in many other deaths, the police simply claimed he had fallen from a window at the TRC, loading tweet. A recent report by the German weekly Die Zeit admitted that hundreds of Ukrainian soldiers who are sent to Germany for military training seize upon the earliest opportunity to flee the army. And even the pro-war Nation magazine recently ran a lengthy story on the growing number of draft dodgers who chose to effectively go underground to avoid being sent to the front and killed. Last week, the famous Ukrainian pop star Olya Polyakova, who was reportedly friends with Zelensky, described the country as a concentration camp in a widely publicized interview. A blogger who criticized the violent mobilization drive, Marian Chava, was sentenced recently to 5.5 years in prison for endangering national security. Loading tweet. Under these conditions, the appointment of Kamara is both a threat and a provocation against a population that, increasingly, demonstrates its refusal to be used as cannon fodder in the war against Russia. It is also tied to the escalating infighting within the ruling class. Kamara's appointment allows Zelensky to further use the SBU to consolidate his increasingly embattled position within the state against the Western-backed National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine, NABU, which has brought a myriad of high-level corruption charges against Zelensky's associates both inside and outside of the government. NABU was set up in the wake of the 2014 Western-backed coup that deposed elected President Viktor Yanukovych. Founded in 2015 by the right-wing nationalist government of Petro Poroshenko, NABU is almost entirely created and directed by the U.S. Its staff is trained directly by the FBI and the European Union. On the same day that Kamara was approved, NABU coordinated the dismissal of state-owned Centrbank's supervisory board head and the suspension of its CEO amid a major corruption probe involving the bank, directly tied to the massive $100 million Energoatom scandal that erupted in November of last year. The accusations led to the resignation or dismissal of Energy Minister Svetlana Hrynchuk, Injustice Minister Herman Haloshchenko, and then later Zelensky's Chief of Staff Andriy Yermak and Defense Minister Rustem Umerov. According to the latest accusations, the suspects in the investigation are accused of laundering $3.4 million through Centsbank to post bail for former Justice and Energy Minister Haloshchenko. The most high-ranking suspect is Zelensky's Deputy Chief of Staff, Irina Mudra, who was subsequently fired following the announcement of the newest NABU investigation into the Zelensky regime. The corruption scandal, while clearly part of an effort to settle accounts within the ruling class, has socially explosive implications. In a desperately poor country where thousands, including the mentally and physically ill, are kidnapped to be sent to almost certain death at the front, it exposes the true class character of the war. After over 4 years and hundreds of thousands of dead, the corruption scandal leaves no doubt that, to Zelensky and the oligarchy he represents, the war is first and foremost an opportunity to enrich themselves. Zelensky's decision to fire the Western-backed Fedorov and then replace him with an SBU veteran exposes the deep crisis of the entire war effort and ruling class. Under these conditions, former acting defense minister Kamara is positioning himself as someone who can be trusted both to escalate the war against Russia and to better manage the growing domestic discontent. In a video address on Tuesday night, Fedorov railed against corruption within the government and called for presidential elections, which have been undemocratically canceled by the Zelensky regime since the declaration of martial law in February 2022. It is dangerous when society develops the feeling that the main criterion for an appointment is not professionalism, results, or the ability to transform the country, but personal loyalty to the system, Fedorov stated, implicitly acknowledging the profound crisis engulfing the Ukrainian ruling class. For workers and youth in Ukraine and beyond, the path forward lies not in siding with one faction of the oligarchy or another. Rather, the turn must be toward the political program for which socialist Bogdan Sirotyuk was imprisoned and sentenced to 15 years. The mobilization and unification of the working class in Russia, Ukraine, and internationally to put an end to this war and the capitalist system as a whole.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.